Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today we are discussing episode 29, the third episode of season 3, The Phoenix Saga, Sacrifice. Hey, Sonia, guess what?
Tell me.
It's Phoenix Month.
I know. Hooray.
For the next month, we're going to be pretty much talking exclusively about the Phoenix. Mm-hmm. The good Phoenix.
Right.
Not the dark Phoenix.
Yet.
Not, yes, right, yet. I have a little problem with that.
Why?
That the new X-Men movie is called X-Men The Dark Phoenix.
Mm.
You gotta do the good Phoenix first.
Right.
And then you get to the dark Phoenix.
I mean, the dark Phoenix sounds cool. I think it's just a marketing ploy.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. But yeah. Still, I mean,
because someone brought that up in the Facebook group, didn't they? That they had seen like a bunch of the advertising for it, and it looks like it's going to end up being about the good Phoenix, and then later on the dark Phoenix is coming.
I think you confused a lot of that. No, that's okay. It's going to, well, we don't know what it's going to be about yet, so we don't know exactly where they're going to start the story and how it's all going to be contained in that movie. Actually, it's going to be a two-part movie, supposedly.
Right, yeah.
So that is good, because yeah. You would assume that part one would be the good Phoenix.
Right.
And the good Phoenix is a phrase I'm just inventing right now. It's
right,
not
the regular Phoenix.
Green Phoenix.
All right.
You got your green Phoenix and your red Phoenix.
Right.
And red is bad, as we all know.
Okay.
Especially if you're a woman.
What?
I don't know. Like, if you're a woman wearing dark red, it's like a bold statement of...
But if you're Chinese, it's good luck.
That's true.
So, now what?
Well, all I'm saying is that I was raised reading these X-Men comics, and the Dark Phoenix was red, and she was bad.
All I'm saying is I didn't get that confused. Someone was talking about in the Facebook group that it's going to be in two parts,
that might
and
be
we all jumped to the conclusion that it was going to be regular Phoenix for part one and Dark Phoenix for part two.
I think that's a safe assumption.
Okay.
But we still don't know for sure.
Anyway.
Yes. Anyway, I prefer the way the X-Men the Animated Series has done this, where it's clearly just the Good Phoenix saga first,
mm-hmm.
and then later on in Season 3, it's going to be the Dark Phoenix.
Right.
And there's going to be some time in between, which is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Much like the comic book.
Yeah.
So, we begin with this first episode known as Sacrifice. This episode starts in a very cool way. It's in deep space, and we see a spaceship dogfight of Star Warsian proportions,
mm-hmm.
you might say,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's a bunch of like these little, like actually really beautifully designed spaceships, like little bug spaceships versus these cool.
They're almost like X-Wing fighters.
Yeah,
the
but
other
on
ones,
a different.
But like at a different orientation.
Yeah. Well, like in the X-Wing.
Like a plus-wing fighter.
Right, yeah. Because in an X-Wing, the X is behind the like narrow sort of cockpit area.
Yeah.
And in this, it's just like an X, but mm-hmm. on its. It's like a T. They're T-wings. You get the idea. And it's a really cool firefight. And although I said it's Star Warsian, it's not quite like Star Wars. And by that I mean like when they shoot lasers, it's like this cool block of like yellow lines.
It's continuous.
Right. Like
fire.
Like a traffic like traffic markings
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And there's other interesting stuff going on, like one space cruiser shreds into another spaceship with mm-hmm. its wing. It's showing that it's almost like an ancient like battle at sea.
Mm-hmm.
That would happen, I think, with those old like dreadnought sea ships. They would ram into each other at times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a great opening scene.
We didn't really talk about the other side of the spaceships, not the T fighters or whatever we're uh-huh. calling them, but like the other side that looks like bugs.
Right. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Those spaceships are really cool.
Yeah, they're like beetle ships.
Yeah, or like the. It almost looks, from the front, it's like the eyes of a fly, because there's
right.
those two bulbous
yeah.
regions
yeah.
on either side. And, yeah, you get, like, big ones and small ones, and...
Yeah, they all look great. We can pretty much attribute them to the art of Dave Cockrum, one of the classic X-Men writers from the late 70s, early 80s, that was working with writer Chris Claremont, who dreamed up the Phoenix Saga. Mm-hmm. And then I think later John Byrne did the art on some of the issues as well, probably for the Phoenix Dark Phoenix Saga part. So it's like, this is pretty faithful to the comics, mm-hmm. this whole thing that the X-Men task writers are creating here and their artists. And that's very cool. I mean, I had the X-Men Phoenix Saga as a kid, the comic reprints, and it was just great to be a fan of the cartoon and then have the comic collected in like a Marvel Masterworks series at home and compare the little differences. I haven't read the comic in a while, so I won't be able to compare everything. I can say generally that for the purposes of this show, they updated it.
Right.
Because in the comic, it takes place in the time it was written, in the late 70s. Mm-hmm. So, and the X-Men Tash show also takes place in its time, which was the 90s.
Right.
So it's a little more updated with some details here and there, but generally it's the same like artwork basis from the comic, mm-hmm. and that's where you get a lot of those awesome like bug ships,
yeah,
like we're talking
about.
Really
cool.
Yeah. So I mean this is like a really epic start to this episode, very cinematic in nature. I mean, we've talked about that before, that
yeah.
occasionally the show really raises the bar in terms of their cinematic presentation. That you know, and that's the great beauty and potential of the show always, is that you know, when they really like gear up for good episodes, mm-hmm. it's almost like watching a movie. And this is a 5-part series, this first Phoenix Saga, so
right.
Essentially,
so it's like
is.
You watch it back to back, and it kind of does add up to a whole movie.
Yeah,
yeah,
and it's great. I mean, and we've said it many times in the show. We've talked about it with the writers of the show that were on an episode, Eric and Julia Leewald. We'll talk more about them later. They did so much of laying the groundwork for the future Marvel Cinematic Universe. Not just the X-Men Cinematic Universe, but just in general. This was the first major serious Marvel production that had a serious tone and a cinematic view.
Mm-hmm.
And with all these like wonderful Easter eggs and things of that nature, pulled from the comics, updated in its own clever way, you know, summarized in a way that makes sense, and you know, because you can never really do the comics literally. I mean, you might be able to, but you know, you have to put your own stamp on it as a production person.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so right off the bat, like really just like a wonderful introduction, and then it's established that what's going on in the midst of the space battle, it's all sort of being projected from the viewpoint of Professor X. Who's having kind of like a fever dream.
Right. He's having like visions while he's sleeping of all this stuff that's
yeah.
going on.
And he's vaguely communicating with someone who he doesn't know who it is. But the person's saying, "Help us, Charles Xavier." And he's like, "Who are you?"
Yeah. And then towards the end of his dream, we see just kind of a shadow of this person, this woman who's wearing this
yeah.
like bug helmet that matches. Mm-hmm. It's like the
very alien.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and it's great. And Professor X is in his bed in his silk pajamas in the X-Mansion,
right.
sweating, and you're freaking out. And that was also pretty true of the comics too. You know, that Professor X was getting these like epileptic fits,
yeah,
that, and he couldn't explain it, and that's actually going to be explored more in a future episode in the saga, one of my favorite episodes coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Like how like much Professor X loses control as he's being sort of assaulted with this interstellar psychic force,
right?
But right now it's a mystery. So anyway, this is all happening in the middle of the night. Professor X wakes up, he summons the X-Men, they're all in their evening robes, well, for the most part. you know, Cyclops and Wolverine and Beast and Jubilee are sort of in their pajamas.
Right.
But Gambit arrives, and he's wearing his fancy man 90s outfit.
Right, he's like, just in the nick of time or something like that. He's like carrying his car keys. He just got in. He's got his like fancy bouffant ponytail and
yeah.
like a button-down shirt with his like chest hairs coming
yeah,
out.
Yeah, a $2,000 silk outfit.
Yeah.
And Wolverine's like, late night or late date? And Gambit's like, not for me. So he's been having fun in his spare time. And so Professor X explains, like, listen, like, I just had a crazy dream. I can't explain any details, but you got to break into a NASA facility and hijack a spaceship right now.
And right. Well, so...
And Wolverine's the only one raising any real serious objection here.
It's that's a crazy idea to me because space is literally infinite, and Professor X has no idea where in space and time, like, these visions are coming from. And NASA is going into space with this one shuttle, like, up to the space station, right?
Yeah.
So the space station is in, like, fairly close orbit to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's the only destination that the X-Men can get to.
Right.
At all, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's the 90s. It's not like we have some, like, crazy futuristic space program.
Well, wasn't the International Space Station, did that exist in the 90s?
I think so.
Well, I mean, so let's...
All I'm saying is that it's like, you know what I mean? It's like you get some vision and it could be literally anywhere in the universe because it's in outer space. And he's like, well, let's go up to the space station and we'll sort it out from there.
Fair
like,
enough. But it is the over... with you know, we'll spoil it a little bit. So this person who's seeking Professor X's help...
Yeah.
She has some kind of psychic bond with Professor X.
Right.
So she's coming to Professor X.
Yeah.
So that's why he instinctually knows that the X-Men have to get into space to help her somehow.
Right.
And he says that something's going to happen on this space mission. And by the way, even though I said it was NASA, it's not in the show, it's not explicitly stated as NASA.
Right, yeah, okay.
And
that made it's the American Space Organization.
Right, but it made me wonder if it's like, is NASA copyrighted in a way that it can't just lift that? I feel like the federal government, do they have copyrights like that? Isn't it just sort of public free use, fair use?
I don't know.
Like, couldn't you just like have like the United States Post Office in a cartoon, or maybe they're not allowed to do that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either. So anyway, they don't say NASA, but right, it's some kind of American space program. I guess on the more secret nature of things. And then the mission itself, it's like I'm a little confused as to what's going on.
Like what the original space mission was supposed to be?
Yeah, they sort of mentioned, like Beast talks about it.
Well, that's the other thing that was really funny to me was that like Beast says like, ah yes, it's being led by Dr. Corbeau. I was just speaking with him.
Right.
And it's like he has all these details. So we've seen Hank McCoy as like a researcher, a surgeon curing blind people of blindness. Uh-huh. Like he's really like
a political pro-stylizer in Congress.
Right. I mean, we've talked about him before and like what a renaissance man he is and how he's like so super intelligent that he's actually successful in all these different fields, but like now we're like, oh, and like add astrophysics onto Beast's resume, like things he knows about,
and just in general, his networking is unbelievable.
Yeah, well, he's a very like gregarious man.
Yeah, yeah. Amongst intellectuals in the Marvel universe, Beast is well connected.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, Dr. Corbeau. Yeah, of course I know him.
Right.
Yeah, right.
It's funny.
And so I think the mission has something to do with there's like these manned solar space probes that they can, like, get into. So it's the regular NASA space shuttle, the black and white one we all know. But inside, there's, like, this space probe that they keep mentioning. It's something to do with, like, a solar probe.
Mm-hmm.
And Beast comments, like, oh, how fascinating, a probe that can, like, get near, like, solar radiation and not, you know, and everyone can be safe inside.
How convenient.
Right. Yeah, but I wonder, it's like, so wait, are they probing the sun? That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's something, it's very much like a comic sci-fi concept. I guess this came first, but like later on, Grant Morrison did his All-Star Superman comic, which is very famous, and they turned that into a DC cartoon movie, which I thought was a little underwhelming because they cut out a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's how that one starts too, is that these astronauts, experimenters are probing the sun. They've got like the spaceship that can fly right to the surface of the sun, and Superman has to save it because Lex Luthor intervenes.
Right.
So this is like the same thing. I thought that was like...
yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. I just like the idea of the sun being like a thing to study. Yeah, exactly. Like it's totally insane.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the X-Men, they're sort of, like, forced to go on this mission. Professor X says, I can't give you any more details. And Wolverine has one of his classic lines. Also, I have to say, a superbly written episode.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the best ones.
Yeah.
And this whole series is great. Like, this whole Phoenix saga, the excellent, like, peak writing.
Yeah.
And
if we haven't pumped you up enough yet, get excited.
Yeah. Wolverine's like, I don't much like getting blown off the planet without knowing why. He's got kind of a grumpy attitude. But he's all for it, though. He's not really objecting to it.
No, he's good to go.
They're all insane thrill junkies. Even Jubilee.
That's a funny way to look at it, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even Jubilee's excited. She thinks, like, she's going to go on the mission to a certain extent. I mean, she knows she's not really going to, and we'll get into that in a second, but like...
Right. But don't you think it's like, they have these adventures all the time where their lives are in mortal danger? Like, you think your threshold just, like, rises every single time, like, a little bit more?
Yeah, we've sort of talked about that in the last episode that teased the whole Phoenix saga.
Yeah.
That the X-Men, they keep having these insane missions where they save the city or save the world or the country.
Right, like, the stakes just keep having to get raised.
Yeah, and they keep succeeding, so they think they're kind of invincible.
Right.
And that's kind of the speaking of, like, them feeling invincible, that's almost the theme of this first episode and the next few.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this episode's called Sacrifice. Let's not spoil it yet, although everyone, I'm sure, familiar with the show and the comic knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But just for the purposes of this conversation. Maybe their invincibility is about to be tested a little bit. But anyway, right before they leave for this mission... Professor X is staring out his window at the moon, much like Batman does from his mansion.
Brooding.
Yeah. And it's just a really funny moment to me where Cyclops kind of just barges in his tight blue outfit. And Professor X is like, I thought you might come.
Right.
So it's like
he's the team leader and you have given him zero details about his mission. So,
yeah. But like, just like the way that scene is like staged so...
Right. Like, it's like, why do you have to be so coy? Just like...
Yeah, there's just something very
just
funny
going
on.
Just be like, hey, Cyclops, I expected to see you.
Yeah.
What?
I thought you might come. And Cyclops is like, don't you trust us? Don't you trust me? Of course I trust you.
Right. Some deep relationship things happening here.
Yeah, yeah. And Professor X is like, if I knew what you guys had to do, I'd tell you. I just don't know. And it's just pretty silly. I mean, I think that they should all have... There should have been a conversation where they're like, you know, Professor, you've got this amazingly powerful mind. Are you sure you weren't hallucinating? Your brain wasn't playing a trick on you. You know, we have a lot of enemies too. So is someone like, is there some laser projector thing in the wall that someone's shooting at your mind? You know?
Yeah.
Sure? It's like, it seems like you might be being conned into like hijacking a spaceship. It's kind of outside of our purview too, as like fighters of mutant rights and stuff, you know? Like,
okay. I mean, you know,
now we're the Guardians of the Galaxy, right?
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. It's a kid's show, you know. We can't,
this is essentially from the comic, too.
I mean, fair enough, but how many layers do you want to put into each one of these, like, you know?
I want to layer as many layers of lasagna, of X-Men lasagna as we can. And this is in the classic Marvel tradition, too. Hijacking a spaceship is very Marvel.
Uh-huh.
That's the origin of the Fantastic Four,
right,
as well, is that, you know, Reed Richards with his... girlfriend at the time, Sue Storm, and her brother Johnny Storm, and his friend Ben Grimm, who later becomes the Thing. They're like, this is literally the plot of the first issue, not like the subsequent movies or whatever, or the retellings. He's like, Reed Richards, who's a brilliant scientist, is like, I'm worried the commies are going to beat us into space. Let's steal a spaceship so we can get there first. And everyone's like, yeah, how patriotic of us. They do it like as like an innocent lark for the cause of patriotism.
Right. Meanwhile, no one's ever been to space before.
Right.
They could like die really easily.
Yeah. They want to explore cosmic radiation. Like, I don't know what was going on, but it was like an insane thing. They like literally, I think they like literally hijacked a spaceship in their like 60s Sunday clothes.
Right.
You know, like their casual like Sunday wear.
Yeah, which is not what the X-Men do.
No, the X-Men
they have their spandex to protect them.
Yeah.
So.
That's right, yeah. So the X-Men launched this mission to hijack this spaceship. They break into the facility, and it's almost like a callback to the first few episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Night of the Sentinels, where the X-Men are breaking into the Mutant Registration Agency. And there's, like, a fence they have to get over, and there's, like, you know, there's some cool, like, action scenes.
Right. I mean, it's funny, because it is definitely a thing that happens a lot in the Marvel universe and in the X-Men universe, where they're breaking into some government facility for a good cause, but
yeah.
There's, like, a funny line in there when Professor X, like, originally is telling them what they have to do, and Cyclops says something about, like, break into a government facility, that's not very X-Men-like, or something like that, but it's, like, delivered totally unironically.
I think Gambit says that.
No, I think it's Cyclops.
Oh, it might be. Whatever. Okay.
Anyway,
it's
like delivered totally like in earnest. And as the viewer, you know, as an adult, like knowing the rest of the stories that go along with it, you're like, really? Like,
yeah, you guys do a lot of breaking and entering of highly secure places. And then we get another, as they're breaking in, we get another, Storm's, Professor X asked Storm to stay behind. And I'm not sure like, why? I guess because she has claustrophobia. Maybe he knows that he doesn't want her to get in a tight spaceship. That might be too intense.
Uh-huh.
I don't have claustrophobia, but that would be way too intense for me. I would not be up for just brand. If someone told me tonight you have to get out of a spaceship, I'd be not prepared. I'd be vomiting before we got on the spaceship. And not even from, like, the idea of breaking into the facility, just from the idea of knowing that my skull is going to be rattling my brain at, like, 10,000 Gs, whatever it is. The anticipation would be too much for me.
Well, this is why you can never be an X-Man.
Yeah, that's probably
sorry.
Right. Oh, no, I could be like Storm. I could stay on the ground. And she has a great line where she's like, "Fog, rise and enshroud us in the cloak of your gray mist."
Right, yeah. To help them break and enter.
Yeah. Oh, and then it's casually noted, too, that a rogue is not there because she's on a mission.
Uh-huh.
So she's on some solo mission we never get to see, which is kind of funny. And that's, you know, I think that's funny that they mention that, because that is almost like a key, like, plot point that people might ask, like, later, why doesn't Rogue help?
Right.
And so, that you know, they had to get Rogue out of the way here.
Right.
So anyway, Storm is providing the fog for their breaking and entering, and it turns out Jubilee has to stay behind once the alarms goes off because she's the bait. And Cyclops explains, you know, in a very clever way, it's like, listen, like, the alarms are off. They have to catch somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and Jubilee's like, oh, I know. I just always dreamed of becoming an astronaut. It's like, really?
I didn't know that was your ambition.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Well, she's a teenager. I mean, teenagers dream of being everything.
Yeah, right.
I mean, she's already an action hero, you know, so that dream's come true.
Right. But she says, like, I never get to have any fun or something like
that.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, she's always lamenting her role a little bit. And then, you know, the X-Men are sort of quipping with each other. Another great little interaction where Cyclops is like to Wolverine, he's like, come on, quit fooling around. And Wolverine says, sorry, Dad. Wolverine's not quite as serious in this episode. He's a little funnier, and I like it.
Yeah.
He's a little on the, like, gung-ho funny side. You know, oftentimes he's, like, lately we've seen him being very serious and very emotionally destroyed.
Right.
It's funny to see him as, like, a little more, like, zest for life.
Right.
So to speak. Anyway, and then the astronauts are in their changing room, and Cyclops blasts them all right in the chest. And he knocks them unconscious. He doesn't kill them, obviously.
Right, and they make a point to tell you that, you know, like, I might be saving your lives by doing this or something. He says
right?
So they, like...
You don't think they're just killing them.
Right, and they, like, make a point to show you that they, like, put them in a containment facility with plenty of food and water.
That's funny.
And, like, you know, they're like, all right, I hope, you know, they'll be fine until we get back or something.
Yeah. But the door they locked them with is this huge iron metal grate.
Yeah, it's containment.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, but still, like, it is like a prison-like... cell they throw them into, which is kind of funny. But anyway, and then they all put on their astronaut costumes, and they're very futuristic astronaut outfits. They're not like your typical like white puffy suits that we all know about. They're like these crazy
like orange and
peach colored
metallic.
Yeah, metallic with lots of weird bisecting tubes and things. And then the aforementioned Dr. Corbeau comes into the changing room and he sees the X-Men and he's freaking out. But Jean Grey quickly psychically projects the faces of the original astronauts on them.
Right.
And he's like, oh, never mind.
And this is the start of Jean actually doing something.
Right, yeah.
Way to go, Jean.
Yeah, Jean finally gets a chance to be useful and heroic. And I guess it makes sense because this is the Phoenix Saga and it's all about Jean, but that's a funny show. All about Jean. But she finally gets to use her powers in a way that she's been severely underutilized up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
Almost laughably so. Like, laughably weak, always falling unconscious, her powers never work right. She always says, I don't have enough power to do this or that. And that actually happens once or twice in this episode, too, where her powers kind of fail her. But still, it's nice to see Jean, like...
stepping up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the spaceship blasts off. Professor X... you know, is watching it go into space with Storm on the launch platform, and he he tells Storm to rescue Jubilee. Now, at this moment, I thought Professor X would just rescue Jubilee, mm-hmm. that he would just use his mind powers and tell the guards to let her go. But instead, he has Storm create, like, a cyclone that smashes through the window of the room Jubilee's being held into, and Jubilee gets, like, cycloned away into the sky.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's cool, but I think the professor could have taken care of this one himself. I
think he could have done it more gracefully.
Yeah, I mean, you would think Professor X, it's like the one, even though he's in a wheelchair, the one power he has is he can go into any building in America using his brain power and just, like, get free passage to wherever he wants to go and, like, extract whatever he needs to extract from anybody, right?
Well.
So, I don't know, whatever. He's got Storm, he's going to use her.
Yeah.
So, the X-Men get into space, and it's here we finally see who this villain is that Professor X has had trouble, like, figuring out. And it's this, like, weird guy named Eric the Red.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at least that's his name for now. His name might change later. But he's, like, this, like, muscular white dude in red barbarian armor.
It's almost like a samurai,
right? Yeah,
style
samurai / like Greek barbarian.
Who knows?
Thing going on.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'm just saying that because Eric the Red seems kind of. It's not like that's like more
Scandinavian,
right? Yeah. Well, it's a lot of things going on with Eric the Red, and even more confusingly, I believe, and this is a bat signal or an X signal to our Facebook group. Cyclops in the comics might have been Eric the Red at first, and for some weird issues,
really,
yeah, and like some like in the late run of the 60s, I think he assumed that costume and that name. And then, so it got extra confusing when this new Eric the Red comes by, and it's not Cyclops, it's, like, this other guy.
Right.
And then that's not even, turns out not even to be his name. He's got this other name. Anyway, he's an agent of the Shi'ar,
mm-hmm.
which we sort of briefly mentioned before, but they're this, one of the major Marvel spacefaring empires.
Mm-hmm.
There's these other ones in Marvel. We've seen in some of the movies, the Kree. And then we haven't seen quite yet, but the Skrulls, because they're more Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
But those are two of the major, like, galactic civilizations out there. And the Shi'ar is the other one. And the Shi'ar is more in the X-Men universe. But, you know, in the mainstream Marvel continuity of comic books, all these things are together.
Mm-hmm.
And all these space things interact with each other. And, you know, you might see them all in a Silver Surfer comic or something.
Right.
Or with Galactus or Fantastic Four, like, whatever it might be. So the Shi'ar are a major one, and they're in the X-Men world. Now, this is something someone can correct for me. I believe the Shi'ar are from the Milky Way galaxy. I might be wrong there. They might be from another galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect they are from our galaxy because, spoilers, the entire galaxy is in danger from the events unfolding here. The events being the result of the Mad Emperor Daken, the emperor of the Shi'ar people. And he's this, like, gruff, scary dude with a mustache. And he's got a sister named Lalandra, who's the protagonist, sort of, here.
Yeah.
And she is, like, good-hearted and not insane. The brother, Daken, is insane, but he's the emperor.
Yeah.
So, essentially, she's escaping him because she has something he wants. It's in this episode, it's referred to as the crystal.
Right.
We don't know the full details yet. We will later. So that's what's going on is that Lalandra is escaping Daken with this crystal and her own, like, breakaway rebel force that Eric the Red describes. And Eric the Red, if I didn't mention, he's an agent of Daken.
Hmm.
And he's been assigned to look after this sector with its backwater human civilization.
Right.
And he hates Earth, and he hates the people on Earth. He
right.
thinks they're backwards monkey people.
He wants to be assigned to a more important planet,
right.
as he puts
it. He's not the kind of alien that has, like, grown accustomed to the charms of Earth.
No.
Which is kind of sad. I mean, you would think that Earth would have a lot to offer an alien.
Okay, but who knows what else is out there? Maybe
right.
not.
I mean, but that's what you wonder. It's like, on Earth, we've got over 200 countries, all these cultures and languages, food, movies, music, history. But, you know, that maybe just, like you said, it just sucks compared to some other planet that's, like, way more interesting.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it's like other planets have, like, golden rainbow, like, astro slides that, you know, you used to get. I don't know. So Eric the Red hates Earth, and but he's finally getting a chance to do something for the Emperor. So that's sort of the subplot there. And then, you know, Eric the Red sees that the X-Men are here and that they must be agents of Lilandra, which in a sense they are. The X-Men don't know they are. Professor X doesn't know that he's making them agents of Lilandra. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of interesting that Eric the Red and the Emperor just know that this is all Lilandra's doing, which it is.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. And he immediately gases the airlock room they're in as after the X-Men board the space shuttle onto the space station, which Eric the Red describes as primitive, but it looks like way more advanced than anything in real life.
Think so? I think it looks like the regular space station.
No, it doesn't. This is like a ginormous like facility with levels and rooms and lots of stuff going on. And it's got multicolored metallic parts in, bisecting itself and... maybe you just didn't look at it close enough, but it's...
I think I saw it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I was going to say that, like, a cool trope of the X-Men is that the technology is just always a little bit ahead of real life.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so it's like a little bit slightly more, I don't know about utopian, but just slightly more technologically advanced Wonder World, mm-hmm. but still, like, the present day.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he immediately gasses the X-Men, and Jean... You know, just in time, she says she creates a psychokinetic shield around her mind to protect herself so she's not completely gassed. So, because it's after they're gassed, he has the whole space station crew, which he's brainwashed with these chips on their necks.
Right.
He has them, like, open the airlock to suck them out, to blow them out of the airlock. A distinction we just learned watching Star Trek The Next Generation last night. We just decided to randomly start watching Star Trek The Next Generation. I've never really seen it, so we started like episode one and we got like four episodes in last night, and that was a point made by Data. He says you don't get sucked out of an airlock, you get blown out. And right. Riker looks at him, he's like, okay, point taken, Data. So actually I don't even know if that's true or not. It must be true if this robot person's saying it. But so anyway, they're gonna get blown out of the airlock. Wait, you have any thoughts on Star Trek, or you're looking at me funny?
No, I just paused to think about that for a second because this is like a totally like not really related. But you know, like in airplanes, didn't they prove that that's like that's a myth, right? That like if a window blows or if the door gets opened by accident or something like that,
people don't get sucked out like they're right, like a vacuum cleaner.
No, like everybody's fine, right?
Well, I don't know, like, if everyone's fine. Well,
I don't think it matters.
Well, yeah, because they have people that parachute out of airplanes and the doors open.
Right.
Yeah.
Except that they pressurize the inside of the airplane. Oh. Maybe that's where that myth comes from. But still, I think it's like, I think it's just an urban myth.
Well, if you're traveling in the air at 700 miles per hour, 29,000 feet in the sky, uh-huh. I can imagine if the door of the airplane suddenly got ripped open that the wind would be insanely intense.
Yeah, maybe. I was just wondering, like, does it work like that in space, too? Because, like, the inside is pressurized.
It seems to be that the case. Who in knows? Every movie and TV show I've ever seen.
Yeah, I don't know.
Where a space hatch gets blown open and people are being flung out the door in the most terrifying way ever. And this is where I get a bit confused about what the mission was. Because is the mission to do, like, a probe of the sun with these solar probes? Or is it to explore this vortex that's opened up in time and space, as Eric the Red describes?
Right.
Because that's what I think, like, Dr. Corbeau talks about with Eric the Red. Because Eric the Red captures Dr. Corbeau. He doesn't want him gassed and killed. He needs him for some reason. Mm-hmm. So I think Eric the Red says something like, this is why you came here, to explore this vortex. Really, it's like...
It's what your science calls a wormhole.
Right. And he says something funny. He says that Shi'ar use these wormholes when circumstances require it.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of funny.
Why is it so funny?
I don't know. It's like you use them when circumstances require it.
So it's not something that you would normally want to do. There's like weird side effects or something.
Yeah. It's like, what's he... It's like kind of bizarre that just the way he phrases that.
Yeah.
I find it interesting. Like, I'm not sure what he's getting at. But it's funny. It's like you're a spacefaring civilization. Wouldn't you be using wormholes all the time? Especially if you control large parts of the galaxy.
Right.
You would be using these wormholes to get around, right?
Yeah.
So,
Maybe it's all part of the same circumstances, though. I mean, circumstances. Maybe it's part of the same mission, though, where Dr. Corbeau, like, maybe the wormhole is close to the sun or
maybe that,
something.
Maybe the sun mission was a cover for the secret wormhole mission that the Earth scientists detected a wormhole. This is, and now it's...
Now we're wildly speculating.
Well, but now we're into the plot of Interstellar. So, so there's this wormhole out there, and Lilandra... in her spaceship is careening out of it. She's escaped, and Eric the Red's trying to destroy her. And it's funny that this Deken Emperor guy is constantly on his VidCom with Eric the Red, like, demanding updates. And Eric the Red's like, I almost got them, Your Excellency. And they're almost dead. And he's like, well, what are you doing? You're so incompetent. And that's actually a great running gag in the next few episodes, is how much Emperor Deken rides on Eric the Red. It's really funny, their interactions. Eric the Red cannot win, as we shall see coming forward. He's just constantly thwarted. And he's really trying hard, too.
But he's constantly being interrupted by video calls.
Right. Well,
he can't do his business.
I know, the X-Men are in his way. But it's just so funny that Eric the Red's busting his ass to get this job done, and he's just can't, like, he's just always thwarted. And he seems very, you know, efficient at what he does, and fast moving and fast thinking, but, like, he can't close the deal. So anyway, you know, at this time, the X-Men, because of Jean Grey managing to preserve herself from being fully unconscious from the gas, she comes to, she sort of awakens the other X-Men. She manages to get the door lock closed before they're all blown out. So she's being more heroic than we've ever seen her be.
Yeah.
And the X-Men, they go to the control panel room, wherever Dr. Corbeau and Eric the Red are. They get into a fight. Cyclops blasts the control panel, which causes a chain reaction that sets the space station to start to explode. It also causes Eric the Red to miss with his laser beam from blowing up Lalandra's ship just in the nick of time. And I love the laser beam animation here.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's like this, like, beautiful, like, violet-colored wedge of laser energy.
Yeah.
That just shoots out in this, like, one, like, parallel direction. And I love that kind of... I love creative laser energy representations in media. My eyes always light up. I guess like twinkly things. I don't know.
Well.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. And so now the space station is blowing up. The X-Men have to escape. They discover that they have to rescue the space crew, too, because they're being brainwashed. Even though they're shooting at the X-Men at times, they're innocent.
Yeah.
So the X-Men have to save them. Eric the Red escapes in his own ship. And the X-Men, they get into the space shuttle. They're flying away. So in outer space, there's... And this is a clever action scene. This is very cinematic. You've got Lalandra's ship with this huge energy contrail behind it.
Mm-hmm.
The X-Men in their crappy, you know, NASA spaceship. And Eric the Red blasting away in his spaceship. So they're headed right for the contrails of Lalandra's energy beam. And Dr. Corbeau's like, if we go into that, we're all going to die. The radiation's going to be too intense. We'll be fried up.
Mm-hmm.
So... they don't know what to do, and also they have to survive re-entry into Earth.
Right.
So Dr. Corbeau is the only one that can fly the spaceship, or so you think.
Right.
But Jean Grey, in a Matrix-like moment...
She's like, oh, but I can just absorb his flight school training. And she doesn't ask or wait for a response at all. She just, like, makes the executive decision. Yeah. She, like, puts her hand on him, and, like,
downloads,
as she's saying it. Yeah, she's, like, absorbing his life force so that she knows how to fly.
Where did this power come from, Jean?
Right. She's like, oh, I can just do this. And she does it, and he passes out, like, on the dashboard.
Yeah, and Cyclops does not like this. Right away, he's like, what do you think you're doing?
Yeah.
She's like, I'm the only one who can do this. And besides, it's too late. I've absorbed his knowledge. I know how to fly the spaceship now. And Cyclops has another great line. I love this line. This line always stuck with me as a kid. I don't know why. But he says, if I can fly the Blackbird, I can fly the space shuttle. I'm like, wow, that is confidence. And you know...
He might be right. The Blackbird might be, like, real advanced technology, like, harder to fly than a space shuttle.
I mean,
Who knows?
Established that Cyclops is an amazing pilot.
Yeah.
He's getting a lot of hours in that, like, incredibly advanced jet of his.
Right. But then the other part of it is that Beast comes in with, like, oh, we can use the solar probe to, like, help shield us.
Yeah, they can be shielded in the manned solar probe, which is inside the space shuttle.
Right, and then Jean also says, like, okay, while I'm flying the ship, I can also use, like, a psychic force field of energy to help.
To protect myself from the radiation, though it seems that might not be strong enough.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Cyclops is really, like, not having it, so Jean just knocks him unconscious with her psychic powers.
Right.
Again, Jean, where were these powers episodes ago when you could have just randomly put people down?
She's just going for it now.
Yeah. And so he's passed out. Wolverine, you know, intervenes, and she's like, don't try to stop me, Logan. And he's like, I wouldn't. I just want to say... And then she just kind of kisses him.
No, he says, good luck.
He does? Okay, whatever. I thought he was going to say, I just want to say I love you, but he doesn't say that.
No, he says, I just wanted to say good luck.
Right, and then she kisses him. And
on the cheek.
Right, yeah, on the cheek, right. She doesn't make out with him while her husband is unconscious.
I feel like you're skewing the vision of this this little scene here.
Right. And so, you know, Jean takes command of the spaceship. They're flying right through Lilandra's energy thing. She's protecting the ship as best she can. But then here we see this other, like, fire force that's been trailing Lilandra's ship. It sort of goes into the space shuttle, and it for lack of a better word, it attacks Jean.
Yeah.
And she starts her blood-curdling scream, which is kind of famous in the show, too.
Right.
And then it's here we realize that it's important that Rogue wasn't on this mission for a couple of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
One, you presume that Rogue could absorb the thoughts and memories of Dr. Corbeau
mm-hmm.
and learn how to fly the spaceship herself.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't have to be Jean.
Right.
And two, like, you wonder how invincible is Rogue.
Right.
That, like, maybe she could just get blasted with solar radiation or whatever.
I mean, probably. Because she can just fly in outer space.
No, she can't. Well, she can't breathe in outer space. She needs to breathe oxygen.
Right, yeah.
If she had her spacesuit, she could. Which is interesting.
Well, anyway.
Well, yeah, so Rogue might have been really useful here, but she's not available. So I'm just trying to think, like, are there any other X-Men that could have, like, helped instead of Jean in this scenario? Hmm. And, you know, it's like, it's funny, Dr. Corbeau mentions that they can't change the spaceship to, it's like the coordinates are locked in, so they have to fly through that contrail.
Yeah.
We've seen in other episodes of the X-Men, like, shoot things with electricity and change the microchips of, like, missiles and stuff, and the guidance systems get altered.
Right.
It's like maybe Storm could have shot the ship with lightning and
maybe,
reprogrammed
it. Well, she's not up there with them,
right, so. Yeah, exactly. So she's not available. So it looks like it's up to Jean. She's the only one that could do this.
Right.
So, you know, and the episode ends there on a cliffhanger where... Yeah. You know, things look pretty bleak for the X-Men.
Yeah. Well, they show us right after Jean has been, like, taken over and is screaming, they show us, like, one, like, frame of the Phoenix.
The Phoenix bird, firebird thing. Which is this, like, ginormous, like, fire monster that has, like, a bird face.
Yeah. A beak.
Right.
A fire beak.
Yeah. It's weird that this... and the Phoenix Force is this cosmic force. It's weird that... it lines up so perfectly with the human urban legend of the Phoenix from ancient cultures, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Does that come from, like, Aztec culture, the Phoenix?
I don't know.
Am I saying that just because of the city, Phoenix, Arizona? It's in the desert somewhere, Native Americans?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Facebook group, assemble. Let us know about where the Phoenix myth comes from.
Right. But isn't that, like, a big theme in the Marvel Universe that, like... it's not that it's a coincidence that it lines up with the Phoenix Saga. It's that, like, ancient peoples maybe, like, got the story of the Phoenix from, like, contact with alien culture.
So you're saying it's like this, it's like one of these classic Marvel things where the mythological bleeds into the, like, reality.
Yeah.
It's like the same thing with Thor.
Right.
It's like the Norse people are worshipping, like, Asgard.
Right.
And the characters there, but it turns out they were all real, of course.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's, like...
the same thing goes with, like, Hercules in the comics, too. I think he's, like, a character. I forget if he's DC or Marvel. Right. He might be in both, but...
it's cool, though. I mean, like, pulling from all these different mythologies, they're really good stories with, like, crazy characters and stuff.
Like, it's, like, it's funny, because in one way, it's lazy, like, story writing from the original, like, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and all those people from back then, when they would introduce these characters, like, Conan the Barbarian or... you know, Thor. But at the other hand, they really did a good job with them.
Yeah.
It's not like they took a really, like, what could we use? Okay, Thor.
Yeah, right.
but they didn't, like, half-ass it, though. They made it super interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. That's, like, one of those, this is, like, one of those things here. Okay. So that's all we got for part one. I think to come, every episode's going to be just as exciting as the last. This is a great run of episodes, so you really don't want to tune out of Phoenix Week here. So,
month,
right, Phoenix Month. Well, this is week one of Phoenix Week Month. I don't know. I got to work on the branding of our show. I just want to, before we do our usual goodbyes, I want to say an extra special thank you to Eric and Julia Leewald yet again.
Yes, thank you.
Do you want to say what happened?
they sent us an amazing present in the mail.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. So before we even opened the thing, like, we got this envelope in the mail.
It's covered in red X stamps.
Yeah.
That, like, are so cool.
Yeah, yeah. We can't throw out the envelope. And inside, they wrote a beautiful personalized letter to us.
On a photocopied first page.
Well, no, that's separate from the letter.
Yeah.
Right. They sent us, like, this beautiful, like, letter that seemed like it was typed on an old-timey typewriter.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was really cool.
Uh-huh.
They signed it with their autographs and everything, which is awesome. And then what'd they include?
And then also a copy of the first page, like, of the first manuscript.
Right.
For
a color photocopy with, like, the, as Eric described or Julia described in the letter, it's got, like, the stain of the 30-year-old paperclip on it.
Right. And some, like, show notes.
Right.
And,
one that said, like, make Wolverine gruffer or something on the cover.
Yeah.
Which was, like, a show note, you know, which is really awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they sent us that, and they also sent us, like, a pack full of, like, 20...
Sentinel business cards.
Yeah, they're personal business cards, which are like sentinels.
So cool.
Yeah, it was really super thoughtful and great, and we were very emotional upon receiving it. And they also, you know, their book's coming out soon. I don't know when just exactly. It's called Previously on X-Men. And they express interest in coming back on the show at some point. And, of course, they're always welcome to come anytime they want to talk about whatever they need to talk about.
Yeah.
And if you haven't listened to it yet, go back to, I believe it's episode 14, or so. It's called, like, Bonus or something. It's the interview episode. So if you love the show and you want to know the backstory, go get it. We did the best we could interviewing them. And go listen to that episode. It's great. And mm-hmm. we're forever grateful for them. And this was just so, like, amazing.
Yeah.
All right. So that happened. That was crazy for us. And then I want to say all the other usual stuff we say.
Okay.
You know, find us on Facebook, the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
Join us, talk to us. You could see, I took a picture of the gift package they sent us. You can get a glimpse of it. You know, I posted that there this week. That's pretty cool. Also, follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson, if you like. Also, rate and review us on iTunes. A 5-star review and a little review goes a long way to helping us get greater visibility out there to connect us with X-Men fans who might be missing out at this point. I suspect that once we complete this show and all the bonus episodes we're going to do with all the movies and other fun stuff we have planned, that a lot of people are going to discover it and catch up in retrospect.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really fun to follow along as it's happening in the present day, don't you think?
I mean, I think.
Right. Yeah, you think. And so, so tell your friends. Help us get the word out there by giving us 5-star reviews and things on iTunes, whatever podcast service you might use. And lastly, Sonia, I didn't mention this to you before, but I believe we're recording this on Saturday, September 30th. I believe on Monday. When's Monday?
October 2nd.
Is that October 2nd? Yeah. Okay. On Monday, October 2nd, the new X-Men TV show is premiering on Fox.
Really?
The Gifted. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know it was happening that soon.
Yeah. So we got to tune into that.
Good deal.
Yeah. So we'll be watching that on Monday, or probably just sometime that week on Hulu, you know, whenever we can catch it.
Yep.
Yeah. With our busy work lives and such. But we'll be on top of that. And we'll let you know what we think of the first episode next week. I hope, anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll forget about it. I don't know. Or maybe it's so bad that we don't even want to mention it.
Doubtful.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm very excited here. You know, rewatching this first episode made me extremely excited about this Phoenix Saga. It's extremely well done. This might be the peak of the whole animated series. This and the Dark Phoenix Saga. We'll see. We'll be the judges of that as we keep going through here.
Won't we all?
Yes. Yeah. So, very good episode. That's all I have to say. Do you have anything you'd like to share with our fans before we go?
Nope. Goodbye.
Goodbye.